everybody. Welcome to Subculture at Creative Coworkers. We're a co-working space, multidisciplinary space, and event space. Thank you so much for coming out to our election night event. I'm really pleased to be co-hosting with the Canby Report. And maybe I'll let Esther say a couple of words about the Dear City Council that we've been running.
Okay. All right. Hi, everybody. Thank you for coming out tonight. So Denise and I both run Dear City Council. It is a grassroots chat night that we've held every week for the last 10 weeks just to learn about the municipal election. It was Denise's idea. I was very new to municipal politics in general, and then it's like, we should learn about it. And it's been a very good journey to learn. We had the candidates come, we had people who were new to politics come, and we had people who were like active grassroots activists. So always a good mix. It culminated in a few things. So we created a gigantic candidate report card that was shared okay widely. I was pretty proud of it. And then now we're at the end of it. So we have our final night. We decided to team up with the Canby Report guys, and I actually don't know the agenda super well, so should I turn it over to you now?
It has been 30 minutes since the close of polls in the Vancouver municipal elections. This is the Canby Report Election Live Show. I'm Matthew Naylor.
I'm Patrick Meehan.
And I'm Ian Bushfield.
And we are joined today by former Mayor of Vancouver, Sam Sullivan. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, Sam.
So tonight's going to be a little bit less well-programmed than a lot of our previous live shows, which is an impressive feat. What we're going to do is we're going to do a bit of a segment here today about sort of what this election has been for us, what this election has been for the electorate, and where we think things are. We might stop at random intervals to look at the TV screen if results do start appearing. And then after that, we're going to take a bit of a break and watch the results. We'll call everybody back to do a chat once the results start to become a little bit more clear and see where things are at. That's more or less the scope. If things go longer into the night in terms of the results, we might do a middle, small, short segment to just chat about what's going on. So for example, we can tell you there are some results that have come in. The City of North Vancouver, it would look like Linda Buchanan has a handful of her councillors on her party already elected, with about 30% of the results in. That has begun. So this is beginning here now. What is next?
Well, one of the reasons that we wanted to have you on the show, Sam, is we don't have the capacity to do this kind of up-to-the-minute, on-the-ground reporting because there are three of us and a computer and three microphones, and so we don't have the ability to like be in Richmond and Surrey and Delta and both the Langleys. So instead of giving you up-to-the-minute reporting, we will give you up-to-the-century reporting and do a little retrospective on how we got here. Oh, my goodness, the flashlight has turned on.
technical difficulties.
But in particular, I wanted to start by going way back to the beginning of Vancouver, to the era of James Douglas and Amor de Cosmos, and some of the early Vancouver elections that shaped Vancouver's history and the political contours of which can still be seen today.
Which does make me realize this is the second time we've forgotten to do a traditional acknowledgement. So we do recognize that we are on the traditional and unceded territories of the Coast Salish, Musqueam, Tsleil-Waututh, and Squamish people. And we're proud to do that here, and glad I didn't forget it until the end this time. But Sam, you've worked on languages that have involved these peoples, I believe. Sort of.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want to acknowledge that 28 people were killed today trying to vote in Afghanistan. 28 people wanted to do what we do. So let us be really mindful of how lucky we are. So I'm thinking about the early days of Vancouver, and yes, there was a language called Chinook, and it was actually just down the street, Dunleavy Street, the Hastings Mill, the largest employer in Vancouver, operated in Chinook. It was an Aboriginal trade language, and anybody who worked there was a major employer. It was Vancouver's working language. So at that time, they were gearing up to the very first election, and I'm very fascinated to kind of see who was involved. And basically, you had on one side these sort of British slash Canadian Commonwealth corporation company types linked up with multicultural communities. So, you know, the Hastings Mill was the only place where Chinese and Japanese could get work. They were the only place that would be hired. And so 60 of them wanted to vote. And on the other side, there was the white labor unions who were very anti Chinese. Definitely, they had a group called the Anti-Chinese Association. Now, what do you think that was about? And so there was these real estate speculators that came in from Winnipeg, and actually the very first mayor, Malcolm McLean, was a part of that, and they had actually deprived some native people of their land, and they were actually wanted in Manitoba. They were considering prosecuting them, but they got away with it. So they joined up with the labor unions and also the prohibitionists, and that was against these businesses and the multicultural groups, and the labor unions were very American-dominated. And so it was interesting that you see throughout history there's been these factions that have allied with each other, and I think it's very interesting to watch how over the century and a bit that these different constellations of groups that have allied and together, and it's basically been the British sort of corporation right versus the labor union American left, and there is that kind of you can trace that kind of history through the history of the city.
It's interesting to me that it was the Americans that brought the left-wing politics to Vancouver. That was not how I would have anticipated that.
Yeah, well, exactly. In the very first election, the labor unions, the guys that had just been hired by the Hastings Mill, they went on strike. And so they created a faction that was against the manager of the mill, Richard Alexander. And when the Chinese attempted to vote, there was a bit of a riot. And there was some violence, and they didn't vote. And as a result, Richard Alexander lost by, I think, 17 votes. And so that set the tone for the city. And within a year, they had a riot, the very first anti-Chinese riot, driven by the Asiatic Exclusion League, which was a creature of the Knights of Labor. So it's important for us to remember this history when we think about where we are and where we're going.
This is the Men of Winnipeg Do Your Duty election, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So Sam also has a fantastic video series which everyone should check out called Cum Tucks. And it is available on YouTube. It is very, very informative, and it ranges from history of British Columbia to urban reform issues in Vancouver, which we'll be able to touch on later. But I do wholeheartedly recommend the channel.
But I just wanted to make one comment. When I was elected in 1993, I went through a decade, or way more than a decade, of constant protests against housing. Anytime somebody came forward with some housing to be built in the city, there would be dozens to hundreds of people, angry citizens, that would come out and protest. And we had a regular speech that I used to give, and sometimes the staff would give. If you continue to oppose housing, you are going to make this city unaffordable.
And, well, that never happened, though.
I do remember a speech several times that I made. And I said, the people that are most affected by your decision are not here because they're not born. And one day, they are going to show up, and they're going to be pissed. and I'm going to be really upset about it because we let them down. So we're here, and you're here. And this is a miracle for me to have lived this long to actually see you here and to be on the bad end of that deal. And there was constant, it was a death of a thousand cuts. Every public hearing went the same way. Angry people, power to the people, the community must prevail, and sure enough, they did. And we are where we are, and you are where you are.
This is the friendliest and most wonderful cauldron of fury, though, that I've ever had the privilege of being a part of.
It's fascinating to me, though. We've talked to so many people on this podcast about sort of the way politics has changed over the last years. And when you were mayor, you fought for, you know, this concept of eco-density, you called it, which was sort of gentle density or whatever you want to brand it as, which, you know, you added in laneway houses and other things like that to sort of bring in the ability to add some density. Are you sort of shocked looking at the election this year at how, you know, some parties are saying rezone the whole city, some parties are saying build more. Wow. Is that something that you would have ever seen coming when you were mayor as recently as, you know, 13 years ago?
No, it seems like I'm in a science fiction movie. How can this happen? I've never seen it before. Very rarely would we ever get somebody coming to city council and saying, I think we should have more housing, you know. It just was not a thing that was ever said.
I mean, it's only feels like a science fiction movie because Vancouver has such a vibrant and thriving film industry. But
and is the star of like every dystopian sci-fi TV show and movie out there.
Speaking of dystopias, the waves of urban reform. So, Sam, one of the theses that you have is that there are three waves of urban reform that have characterized Vancouver's history. Why don't we start at the beginning with number one?
Okay. So 1860s was really when the first wave washed across the country. And that was really making cities responsible to the citizens. And it said every city has to have a standard form. And you established this idea that there would be real processes that were transparent. What happened was that there was so much incompetence and corruption from that decision to bring in democracy, that there was another wave in 1910s really took off, and that was the second wave. And that was about professionals and experts and technology, and it really ramped up the civil service. And it designed, it believed in a better design, and people saw that technology was the hope. And everything was getting better. Electricity, wow. All the wonderful things that came from that. And then came something called Auschwitz and another thing called Hiroshima. And they said, oh my God, we give the world over to the experts. And they gave us a nightmare. Maybe experts need to be reined in. And that was the third wave of urban reform. And so it basically was a postmodern phenomenon where they said, every voice has its truth, and there is no privileged meta-narrative. There's no grand story. There is no experts that have a more privileged truth than others. And so that created what we have today, which is the public hearing, which is the quintessential postmodern institution. Every voice has its own truth and needs to be seen at the same level of every other voice.
But that almost comes across as the very, like, optimistic view of it, except for maybe the present. Another view that I've heard a lot of people talk about is in the early days, like I think everyone agrees early Vancouver was very corrupt. You just have to look at how the legislature went, how the city, but there were a lot of voices who were never heard at City Hall and who've needed to be heard. I mean, this is the city of the Asiatic Exclusion League, like we just talked about. This is the city built on unceded mm-hmm. territories. And so it's not necessarily that we've fully given up on expertise, perhaps. Maybe there's a balance we can find of hearing those voices, including those perspectives that may have been purposefully or accidentally, however you want to see it, excluded.
Yeah. No, it's just a switch. Experts and mobocracy. It's the only two options.
One or the other.
Well, one of those voices...
Yeah, it's a word.
One of those voices were voices of disabled people. And the third wave was a wonderful miracle for people like me, because those voices started to be heard. So there was a whole bunch of great things. The third wave was very place and time sensitive, like heritage appreciation, physical geography. You know, the Falls Creek is only half as big as it used to be, and there was a consensus in the 50s to fill in the whole thing. And they had the roads all set out and ready to go. And, you know, right if you, the very center of Falls Creek is right now where the science world is. That was in the middle of water. And the Falls Creek went right up to Clark Drive. So they were filling that thing in as fast as they could because it really was a nuisance. You know, it's in the way. And so they needed productive capacity. And so this is the kind of benefits that the third wave gave.
One of the things that you said in your video that really hit home for me was that which feels green was green. Yeah. And I think that that it speaks to some of the detriments of the third wave and how our environmental feeling policies, like not having big concrete apartment blocks, may not have been as environmental as they seemed.
Yeah, well, the third wave, some of the negative sides for me, well, you will talk to people from those days and they swear that the 1972 election was about the freeway. Well, no, it was not. The freeway debate was 67 and 68. The freeway was dead by 69 or 70. And if you look at the newspaper of those days, 72, the campaign, it was about the West End. It was about density. They thought the West End was a horrible thing. It should never have been allowed to happen. So before 1973, the 15 years before, there were 250 residential towers built. In the 15 years after 73, there were 20. And I believe most of those 20 had been approved before. So basically, there was a moratorium on high-rise residential. And that was when everybody fled to the suburbs, sprawl. And what they said was, you know, we want to be green. And everybody should have their own green home surrounded by greenery, maybe have a chicken or whatever. You would, and so if you really look at that model, it's suburbia. Suburbia was considered the most green form of living. And now when you actually measure the impact on water, on energy, and all these things, suburbia is a nightmare, an environmental nightmare. It is the worst thing you could ever do to the environment. And so they realized, whoa, what happened before 73 was way greener. You know, the West End has way better economic, environmental, social performance than the suburbs. And so that changed a lot of minds.
Thankfully, the Green Party has resolved that to everyone's satisfaction.
Yeah, they believe in that old model of green. Everybody should have their own single-family home.
So, shifting gears slightly, you know, you were mayor for 3 years, and you were a councillor for so many years before that. What do you have in terms of reflections on the changes that have occurred since then, not just in terms of how we talk about housing, but other things that have happened in the last, say, 30 to 40 years, that sort of shift in the way we talk and the way we vote municipally?
Well, a lot of it is based on you guys. You know, we never had people who were actually getting screwed by the whole decision-making of the past few decades. And there's this awareness that really things need to change. And so there's 50 years between each revolution. And between, you know, so my theory is it's not going to happen this election. It'll happen the next one. 72 to 2022 is when the real revolution will happen. But this is the precursor. We're going to see the movement toward the revolution.
Are you predicting Gene Swanson mayor in 2022?
Well, that's the fourth wave. And so nobody knows what the fourth wave. The fourth wave is out there, and we see the fourth wave. We just don't know which one. You know, life can only be lived forward and only understood backward, unfortunately. So the fourth wave is either Gene Swanson or it's Wei Young, and I don't know which one it is.
The thing about, like, hope for the fourth wave is that it like, it comes with its companion emotion, terror. So, like, these wave parties, if Coalition Vancouver and Yes and One City are fourth wave parties, would you call like, and the MPA is like the second wave thing. Do you? I totally had a question going into this sentence, but well, it's gone now.
I see. It's this Apollonian Dionysian. It's actually not a trajectory. It's actually a circle. We go from one and then to the other. Apollonian order, expertise, then kind of a joyful Dionysian chaos, and then back to order. So I think that the next wave will be an Apollonian.
Well, speaking of joy and chaos, victory parties.
In fact, somebody has been declared victor already in the District of North Vancouver. In the District of North Vancouver, Mike Little has been declared victor over Ash Amlani for building bridges North Vancouver. And so we already have a victor. But I guess with what Matthew was saying is victory parties are, or, you know, celebration parties or election parties, whatever you want to call them, everyone has them. They're happening all across Vancouver now. What do they feel like for the candidate? You know, as a mayoral candidate, when you're getting ready and you're on the election night, what are you doing? What are all of the what is Shauna Sylvester doing right now? What is Kennedy Stewart doing right now that you would have been doing in 2005 when you were waiting to find out what the results were going to be?
You're terrified that you'll get a minority because you know, I was just worried about all. I needed six. I needed six. You know, and I got my six. You know, but that was just.
So you were just confident you were going to win yourself?
No. I didn't want to win if I didn't get six. You know, that
well, right now, only Ken Sim has a chance. I guess Wei Young technically is running a majority slate, but...
Yeah, the Vancouver District Labor Council is not at all something that was, you know, designed to have people work together.
You have very disparate points of view between Cope and the Greens and have One
you,
City.
Have you met the left? They don't work well together.
They worked better together this time than the right.
They did.
But
yeah, it was the right that couldn't play well this time around.
Yeah, the rule in Vancouver is you split and you die. So the NPA is in, I think it's 4.5 parties. So the NPA board did not understand that rule.
Or many other things.
Yeah, so I guess the victory party, it's the most fascinating thing. So I think it was the funniest thing. So on the left, we've always, as far as I've always remembered it, we've always called it a victory party. And it's been sort of like, it was like the NDP would always call it a victory party, no matter what, it was always the victory party. And I mentioned it to Matthew once years ago that, you know, I was going to the NDP victory party, and he gave me this look like I was a space alien. Because I guess your guys on the right, or the center, depending on your definition, you don't call it that?
No, it's bad luck. It's bad luck to call something a victory party unless you know you're going to win. The presumption is that there is a chance of you winning, and so you shouldn't jinx it otherwise. And to do what apparently the NDP does is hubristic.
And I'm not superstitious, but looking at results, you might be onto something.
So keep on keeping on, NDP. Enjoy your victory party tonight.
Well, the other thing that goes on in Vancouver elections is typically when the left is in Victoria, the right will win in Vancouver. And, you know, the right in Victoria, the left wins in Vancouver. So this may change that whole calculation.
I think the thing we might see, I've heard that a lot, and the same sort of applies federally. And that's the argument of why we're seeing so many conservative parties knock down liberal ones across the country. But if you look across BC, beyond more than just the city of Vancouver, I think we're looking at a change in Surrey. Well, they don't have someone running again. It might be a change back. And some of the other constituencies may also see that sort of trend go to a more anti-density sort of suburban pro-party.
Well, and also Vancouver is becoming less of a force than it used to be. As the suburbs grow and grow, Vancouver is not as big as it thinks it is.
So I guess one of the things we wanted to ask Gregor when we had the interview with him, but we just didn't have time, and it's not really political. It's more just, you know, when you're mayor, for you, what was the thing about being mayor that you thought was the most interesting that most people wouldn't know about that you enjoyed?
probably the most enjoyable was going to the Olympics and flying a flag, you know.
Actually, yeah, I could have guessed that one.
You know, I tell you, having these guys show up like His Holiness the Dalai Lama, you know, they feel that you have to go and see the mayor of Vancouver. And I said, whoa, that's pretty nice. And I remember getting the instructions, me and Lynn here, don't touch His Holiness, you know. And he came right up to me, went right by me, and went to Lynn and put his nose on her nose and did this to her. And I was saying, wow, you know, this is just, I can't believe that this is me.
And then on the flip side of that, you know, when you're mayor, you know, there's things you probably didn't like doing. What was the thing you hated the most about the job?
Why do you ask me that?
Other than getting, you know, yelled at by people that don't agree with you.
Okay, public hearings.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was actually the most soul destroying, for sure, was the public hearing and just hearing people over and over and just hearing it. And it was so destructive to the city.
So one of the things that's, I think, changed since you were mayor across politics, and you're still in politics, though, is the rapid growth of social media. Do you think that conversation has had a real effect on our politics, for better or worse?
Yeah, you know, we used to have, there was about four or five people in the city that controlled the messaging to the citizens. And if those four or five people didn't like you, you were in trouble. And we all hated them, and now we miss them, you know. They were intelligent, they were thoughtful, they had really great biases, and they were, we just hated it when you're biased against you. But you did see that they were solid people, and I miss them. And this social media and the need for clicks, and it's not just affecting the social media, it's affecting the media. And, you know, one of my favorite topics, which, you know, is not a popular thing to think of, to say, is that this idea that the Chinese are causing our high house prices, that is such a great click bait. And even the regular media are affected by that, and they can't help it. When they now know, the editors now know who's reading their articles. And it was great when they could just write what they thought they should. Now they have to write what they think is going to get clicks.
Yeah, I think, so cognizant of the time, because I think results are going to start coming in, we're going to switch into a bit more general discussion with all four of us here about sort of what the surprises of the election have been, what we sort of think came about, as well as some reflections on what it's been like to do the Cambry Report. I know we did a little bit of it last episode, and then eventually we'll launch into actually explaining what we're going to do after the election. But I guess for everybody, for all four of us here, and I'll pass it off to whoever wants to go first, what was the biggest surprise you guys had about the election?
I mean, the biggest thing, it's maybe not the biggest surprise, but we haven't talked about this, but yesterday Vision dumped one of its candidates, which it sort of plays into this, all the parties are scrambling so much and there's been so much. We talked about Vancouver First, but losing candidates. In this case, Vision, it was Wei Kui-Zhang, I believe.
Yeah. Zhang Weichao.
Zhang Weichao. Vision decided he's no longer with them. His Vision still appears on the ballot beside him. But if he's elected, he will not sit with Vision, he will not caucus with them. And it suddenly takes this party that was in power for 10 years with a mayor to, they were going to run five, which could win them a majority, to now they have nothing. Well, their best case scenario is to like hold the balance of power with other coalitions. And no one knows the full reasons why. There were some controversies around him, and Vision isn't saying it was this or that. So that was a weird story just in the last 24 hours.
Everyone who left Vision Vancouver after me is a heretic. But
that is one of your best lines you've ever come up with.
I actually think that there is some kind of salience in this, is that Vision's collapse for a party that had all the levers of power, who had all the money, who had all the fundraising ability, for them to like crash and burn basically in a manner that is either spectacular or like Spider-Man the musical. Got some Broadway fans in the audience there.
I may have missed that one.
It was bad.
Okay.
So some people have come from away. I don't.
I got that one.
All right. So, like, for me, it was a tie between either Vision's collapse or the Year of the Independent. And certainly, maybe I am overselling this a little bit because the results haven't quite come in yet. But, like, I think that we could see independents elected to council for the first time in a dog's age, a term that I have... Yep, there we go. A dog's age is almost exactly how long I have been alive.
So a year ago, I got my first ever call from the NPA to go down to the office and talk to them. And I said, I've never seen, you know, an opposition go against the government for a big fight, and the government just sort of drops their weapons and walks away. I've never seen this. This is unprecedented. All you guys have to do is go to City Hall, walk up the stairs, take the keys, and drive away. Just make sure you don't trip on the way up, or even more, don't push each other off the stairs, and you'll be fine. And, you know, there they went and pushed each other off, and they couldn't fighting. So that was, I've never witnessed a monolithic powerhouse machine just disappear.
Those are all really good answers. I was going to say age. I think age is the thing that surprised me the most out of this one. Is there are very few baby boomers running for office that are likely to be elected compared to any other election before, which, to be fair, anything under 100% prior to this election was surprising. But the demographic shift that we've seen this election is huge. I think we could have a majority of council, if not all of council, being Gen Xers or younger. I think we could have, we've got a lot of people that are running campaigns that are Gen Xers or millennials. And I think that we are really seeing an age transition right now that I was very caught unaware by. And I didn't realize that it had happened even until I built my ballot. And I looked at my ballot and I said, I think I'm voting for like two people over 50 on council. And that's pretty rare for the last, you know, couple of decades. I think that this generational shift might really be happening, and I think we might be seeing that in the voter base too. And I'm really curious to see what happens with that and whether or not the mantle has sort of shifted and we're going to see sort of Gen X sort of take control from now on.
We're also seeing a far more diverse council run. I think almost all the major parties have committed to running a gender diverse equal slate of half men, half women. And you look at some of the parties and they have women who are way stronger than most of the other men running, period.
Vision? Like Vision Vancouver, for sure.
One city?
Okay, yeah. I like Brandon, but okay.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's just an interesting. It could be, I don't have the stats in front of me, but it might be the first time we have a majority female council. And we could have the first female mayor.
Yeah, it's very possible.
That did not elicit. They're all at Shauna's party.
Yeah. So, Well, thinking back to a couple of months ago when we started this podcast, the first six, I do a countdown every episode. You would think I would know this kind of thing, but nope. The first email that we got after an episode which... In fairness, I didn't participate in, but the first email that we got was a list of corrections by one Sam Sullivan. So you,
in fairness, it started off with "What you guys are doing is great. I loved it, but."
And so I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight of all nights, because it is like the alpha and the omega of our elections coverage.
Well, I run around these days trying to find guys just before they die, you know, who remember the 60s. I'm trying to find someone from the 50s. I can't find anybody. And I realize I'm actually that old guy now that actually remembers Harry Rankin, remembers, you know, these amazing parts of our past and how things worked. And, you know, I want to just make one gripe here, because what the new people are going to face is very different from what we have faced all through Vancouver history. and that we had this tradition of the British civil service. So Philip Owen had a city manager named Judy Rogers. Then Larry Campbell had a city manager named Judy Rogers. Then Sam Sullivan had a city manager named Judy Rogers. And it was this idea of the civil service should be a nonpartisan and should be, you know, professional and independent. And I call Vision the Americans. They're, you know, they have brought in the spoils system, very much an American system where you just cut off the top bureaucracy. And to me, that is the biggest loss for Vancouver. We lost incredible institutional memory, and I don't know how you stop it once you get that going. If a new group comes in, they're going to feel obliged to get rid of the top level, and then we go into this cycle that is really destructive and not helpful.
It'll be interesting to see how, because we'll get a mayor, unless it's Ken Sim and he gets a majority NPA, we'll probably get an independent mayor or someone who doesn't have a majority on council. And we did sort of put that to Gregor, like, how do you work with civil society or the civil service, sorry. But, you know, Kennedy's been openly New Democrat partisan in this race, and Sean has tried to play to every side. And it'll be interesting to see whether it sort of returns to that sort of pre-partisan civil service or if it just doubles down.
Well, we got a great city manager right now who does represent, you know, truly a decent, thoughtful, independent, in my mind. So I hope that he'll stay, actually, but we'll see.
I mean, like, what you have articulated is a horrifying thought that I hadn't even considered with respect to the city. So I'm going to wait with bated breath to see who the new head of the planning office is, if there is a new head of the planning office, and who the new city manager is, if there is a new city manager. And I do hope that there can be some kind of continuity in government, especially since it looks like the most we could see in terms of reelected councillors is three?
Two or three.
MDG, Adrian Carr, and Heather Deal.
Well, I thought as soon as they came in and took down that picture of the Queen, the first time in the history of the city, I thought, ooh, is that just, is that mean something bigger? And it did.
It was really funny when we got that email from you, Sam, there, you know, a couple episodes into the show, maybe it was like a second episode. And it meant that we really realized that we were hitting something where people wanted to listen to us. And we really didn't think that was going to happen. And we certainly didn't think that we would sell 66 tickets to a live show tonight. And I think more tickets have been sold since then at the door. And I really want to give a huge shout out to everybody here. First of all, like, thank you all for coming. This is amazing. You can all clap for yourselves. We were positive that we were going to get less people than we normally get for a live show on account of you guys might be going to, you know, Kennedy's thing or One City's thing or NPA's thing or anybody else's thing. Yes, Vancouver, Coalition Vancouver, all of the weird things that have Vancouver in their name. But you're all here, and that's really cool. So we had to spend a lot of time thinking about what we were going to do next, and we have a bit of a plan. And I think now's when we're going to announce it. Isn't that the case?
Sure, we agreed.
As Matthew looks. Yeah, well, it was in the list.
It is. It is the time that we are going to announce it, and I never, ever was surprised about that statement.
I mean, we've been super honored to have the support, and the one thing that's been the most common emotion of the last, say, 6 weeks in particular is exhaustion. As we run around interviewing as many council candidates as we could, interviewing four mayoral candidates, which was a huge pleasure, editing all those episodes, publishing them, putting them on social media, and all of that. So we're a bit tired. That said, we love having listeners, and so we're going to keep producing content.
I'm going to keep you guys in suspense for a second, because I have a couple of results to announce. Jonathan X. Cote is officially the new mayor, or the continued mayor of New Westminster, and his entire slate... His entire slate has been reelected. Daniel Fontaine appears to be 1,200 votes behind in terms of being able to get on. Daniel Fontaine, I believe, was your chief of staff in Vancouver, was he not? And Daniel Fontaine was leading the charge against that party. As well, we have initial results from Burnaby, with six polls reporting in, 3,138 votes for Mike Hurley, 2,877 votes for Derek Corrigan, 48 to 44, with six polls out of 51 reporting. So far, turnout is at 4% because only six polls have reported.
Can I just say something? The reason why I gave you that email was I couldn't believe what I was hearing from you guys. You guys were so open and thoughtful and willing to give all the candidates a chance. And it just was so wonderful when all the crap that I hear on social media, and then comes you guys. And I just am so thrilled with what you guys have done. And I think all of us should be grateful.
And I think that leads perfectly into what our tentative future plans are. As I mentioned, we're very tired, but we want to keep producing content. So I think our goal is going to be, rather than daily episodes like we've had in the last week and a half, if you count all the council interviews, but something more like twice a month, we'll have episodes out. One will be our regular talking about the news, the issues, bring a guest on who's much smarter or has better perspective than us on other things and can provide that different clarity. And then we'll also produce a special deep dive into something. Maybe, Patrick, I know you want to hold a roundtable on housing issues and development. I want to talk to a bunch of strategists to get their debrief from this election, particularly a lot of the women who are running as powerful strategists behind these campaigns.
I'm really excited to dive into some of the planning history and look at whether the Harlan Bartholomew plan will continue to govern our lives forevermore.
So for the person that complained on the Apple podcast review that we're a little too wonky and a little too policy-oriented, here
you
we go.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
But we will be coming together as a regular podcast, as Ian said, sort of fairly regularly, and talking about as things shake out. You know, we're still waiting, but my anticipation is that this is not going to be a unified council. This is not going to be a simple council. And it should be a very interesting 4 years. And I, for one, am extremely excited for it. I think.
And so keep supporting us on Patreon if you are.
On that note, I know a lot of people have just...
No, wait. Where can you find our Patreon, Ian?
For fuck's sakes.
It's patreon.com/CambyReport.
Patreon.com/CambyReport. Now, the last I checked, they were getting $100 a month.
Oh,
and
you
they
checked
have to split between the three of them. So please, guys, this is really important what they're doing. So
you haven't checked recently. Up. People have been really generous in the lead up to the election.
People need to give us more money.
We still can't quit our day jobs.
That's a great question. And in fact, we were about to launch into a question and answer segment. For anybody that has any questions for sort of what we've done, where we're at, what we're doing, we're going to do a quick, probably 5-10 minutes. So maybe we've got a couple of spaces. So the first question was, did Peter Wall pay for us? I wish.
If only.
$85,000 could go a long way for our podcast. It'd be great.
One of the things that came up when we launched this podcast, and this actually came up when I launched Politicos, my other podcast, is like within 2 weeks of launching, already people on Twitter were like, this looks like a front. And for Politicos, it was, no one was really clear about what side we were on. I think we were like NDP hacks. And this time, I think people were thinking we were NPA hacks. So, I don't know, these allegations dog us, and we will neither confirm nor deny anything if it keeps us in the news. Other questions, you can either come up or just shout them out.
Before we launch that, I should say that this Q&A segment is brought to you by our beer sponsor. Main Street Brewing was wonderfully generous enough to donate a keg for the beer, for the event tonight. If you by any chance are at Main Street Brewing, which is located at 8th and Main, just on 8th Avenue there, if you're there and you happen to be buying a growler or one of their fancy and wonderful beverages, feel free to let them know that you enjoyed their beer here at the Camby Report live show. On that note, questions.
Hi, friends. So a couple live shows ago, I asked a question about everyone's favorite topic to hear about on a podcast, which is a graph that you can't see. You can't see the graph. Microphone's not working very well. You can't see a graph on a podcast, but we had a bunch of people on Canby Report, Slack, and on Twitter vote about where they thought the candidates may have fit on that graph. And looking at it, you know, it was voted maybe a couple months ago. We learned a lot more about the candidates and the position. So I was wondering if you guys would be up to open it up and take a look and see if you feel like any of the candidates have shifted in their positions. Because in my work trying to put together a guide of where everyone was at, I had a few people saying, is this candidate really actually left of this one? Or is this candidate really, like, they seemed this way? And, like, for example, we have, you know, some green candidates saying, maybe we should have more housing. Or, you know, some people saying, oh, is this candidate, you know, is this party really where they are? So I was curious whether or not that might be something you'd be up to take a look at.
The inevitable reprise of charts on a podcast. Them in your eye.
What are you talking about? We actually have a projector for this.
Yeah, one which will apparently be downloaded with the episode.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Where
am I going to?
This one. I don't remember where everyone was initially, and you can see on this graph the left-right sort of traditional axis along the bottom and the up-down urbanism conservationist axis. The one without a label in the far corner of the extreme is Coalition Vancouver. Thank you all for putting them in the wilderness. I think many have moved. I don't think we've had a ton more responses as well. The one thing I'll say, and this has been fascinating, is how many people have picked up on this. And Stuart Prest is in the room, and he helped develop this. Hi, Stuart. We were quoted in the Globe and Mail recently, where they stole one of these graphs, and that's totally fine. They credited us and said, you know, here's this version. But it's just interesting to see how this has shaped the narrative and the discourse around it. So in terms of the results, I think there are some parties where I would spread out the party. Because if you look at, say, the Greens, Adrian Carr is a very different candidate than Michael Weeb or Pete Fry, and I don't know where David Wong would fit. If you look at Cope...
I might do the same with Cope, yeah.
Yeah, Gene Swanson and Derek O'Keefe are much different than Ann Roberts, who runs a more old-school leftist campaign. I mean, one city is two people who are, I think, pretty close ideologically.
Also,
Vision,
think,
who knows?
I think in the last 5 days, based on the flurry of press releases that Kennedy Stewart frantically tacked downwards on that. I think I definitely saw a number of policy planks come out on, like, Wednesday, saying that, or that basically pushed Kennedy Stewart farther down, and I imagine that was...
Wait, Kennedy Stewart had positions?
Well, he's taken a very active role in moving and identifying with one city and their policy, and whether that's strategic just so that he can help them get elected to beat the NPA, or if he thinks they're doing, and I think this is less likely, that they're doing so well that he needs their votes to win. But in either way, he feels there's some advantage to identifying with them publicly in multiple tweets, in some paid flyers, which seems to run afoul of our very...
There'll be a review of those laws after this election, and I'm going to look forward to submitting my thoughts.
So I might move Kennedy a little bit closer to one city. Shauna, I might move tiny bit right, but I think she's still, or maybe even a little bit more urbanist.
Pro Vancouver was really mad at me when I published this chart with them on the right. They did not like that.
I still don't know where I would put Pro Vancouver at all on any score.
Okay, yeah. So during the Suzanne Anton election, the Gregor Anton, Gregor Suzanne Robertson Anton election, equivalency. The problem that I had about the MPA was that they were running very stupid. They were running a campaign that was based on opposition to chickens and a streetcar and, yeah, bike lanes. And
the
like,
only access that matters is bike lanes.
And while I have my own criticisms of Vision for also being a party of stupid, there was just like two left for me in Vision and two dumb for me in the MPA. And so I feel like Pro Vancouver has not presented a particularly smart platform. Everything about this comes down to like first impressions, and their logo is a hawk dove.
All right. Other questions? Feel free to come on forward, and I can pass you the mic.
Some interesting things are happening in Surrey right now. I feel like maybe now is a good time to talk about it. Doug McCallum looks like he's sweeping with 7 of 8 seats.
Is that okay? I haven't seen that. I swear to you, and don't tell anyone he said this. I literally, while I was in CBC offices today, heard multiple journalists talking to each other, trying to figure out what the hell was happening in Surrey, because no one seems to know what the political parties are doing in Surrey at all. It seems like the left and the right have coalesced to beat the center, which is not a standard strategy.
Extremism in all ways.
Grand coalition.
So it is unbelievable. But I guess like Surrey First is tired. They've been running for a long time, and I think it's safe to say. And I think like I guess Sam, you might be able to have a perspective on this. I think it's safe to say that parties in power for a long time can grow tired a bit, and they maybe their message gets a bit stale. Is that safe?
Absolutely. Yeah, they have to keep finding ways to renew. But I believe that McCallum was against light rail.
McCallum has said that he's going to cancel the light rail, which is curious.
In favor of SkyTrain.
Now, Doug McCallum was mayor of Surrey for most of the 90s, and during that time was an... So he froze taxes 100%. Like, he did not even increase them with inflation. He unbelievably cut various elements of the civil service. He is a classic Reagan type, like to an nth degree. And it's really curious that the left aligned with him in order to take down Surrey First. And I think really what it was everyone was tired of not beating Surrey First. And so now they want to win rather than be right. And like I say that as somebody who spent a long time being involved in politics in Surrey. And that's what it feels like to me. And it is kind of sad because Tom Gill, I don't necessarily agree with in a lot of ways, but he's a reasonable guy. And it would have been really cool to have a major city in BC led by an Indo-Canadian, like a South Asian. And that's my take on it.
When I was on city council, Doug McCallum was old.
Maybe he found the Benjamin Button machine and he's like regressed.
Nobody, like,
there's no evidence for that.
Honestly, I reached out to everybody I knew in Surrey to ask what was going on, and everybody shrugged when I asked them because everything got weird. Political parties split, and half of them went to one party, half of them went to the other party. Political parties were created and then fell apart again.
Fell apart during the campaign and didn't tell its candidates?
Yes. That was the left-wing party, and their mayoral candidate ran for council under Doug McCallum, who is the farthest right person in the race. Like, this is bizarre. And so that's what you get. I think the biggest problem is that Surrey doesn't have the civil society that Vancouver has. And if I could get onto like a bit of a soapbox, I actually mean this. Surrey is too small to be a big city and too big to be a small town. And so it can't have the politics that Vancouver has, and it can't have the politics that New Westminster has either. And so it can't have sensible politics. It doesn't have civil society groups that work together and arrange things. Their political parties fall apart between elections entirely and then come together 3 months before the election rather than a year before the election to start planning.
And so the Calgary system.
Yeah, and so Surrey doesn't actually have a functioning polity, as you would call it, in a political science realm. And I'm sure I could bring Stuart up here and he could talk interesting things about that. But that's the biggest problem I found in Surrey, was it doesn't have the size to really get under its own weight, and it's too big to be able to be managed as like a small town would.
Brenda Locke is back in politics. How about that?
Brenda Locke will run for election as often as
there are elections.
Judy Higginbotham,
lose. The Judy Higginbotham of the right.
Brenda Locke, the first time she was elected to public office was 2001 under the BC Liberal sweep. She was elected into Surrey Green Timbers, if I recall correctly.
That's not a BC Liberal riding.
And then Sue Hamill probably took it back in 2005. Good question. Yeah, thank you. Other questions?
It looks like Leonard Krogh has been elected mayor of Nanaimo. Could Sam maybe address potential provincial implications?
I'm not going to run in Nanaimo.
So I guess that means there's a by-election that's going to be held. The by-election he won't resign until he takes office, is what he's said, which means the by-election could be held sometime, probably with election day after the throne speech, is my guess, if the NDP decide to do things as they, I assume, will.
Well, the last Nanaimo mayor that was also an MLA maintained both jobs right through.
Was that Stupich?
Mayor Ney.
How many polls is that?
31.
That's small. That's 7,700 votes, guys. Like, We have a total of approximately 20,000 votes out of 170, so we'll see where this goes.
Which catastrophe will we enjoy? I have opinions.
Anything for council on there?
Adrian Carr is topping the ballot. Pete Fry is second. Melissa DeGenova is third. Colleen Hardwick fourth. Gene Swanson, Michael Wiebe, Rebecca Bly, Lisa Dominato, Christine Boyle, and Sarah Kirby Young.
What part of the city are these riding?
Wow.
I will say, like, bear in mind, people, like, there was an election in 2006 federal election where a Marxist-Leninist candidate was in the lead for most of the night before finally not being in the lead. These are preliminary results, so don't, you know, read in them as you will. I guess we have probably time for one last question, given where we're at now. Any questions, or do we want to run? Yeah, Lois Chan, Matthew and I know from a number of years ago, so we're kind of excited for her. Any other questions, or should we go back to watching results? I think we're hearing a result. Let's go back to watching results. All right, thank everybody for your time. We're going to call everybody back in again in about an hour, probably, once we get a real clear picture of what's going on in Vancouver. And feel free to grab some drinks, grab some sandwiches, and enjoy your time tonight.
And again, thank you to Main Street Brewing for supplying the beer tonight.
And one last thank you to Sam Sullivan for coming out and talking about Vancouver history and where we're at.